Other fish news going in the opposite direction. A deadly fish virus is spreading through the Great Lakes and surrounding waterways. According to a new report, hemorrhagic septicemia virus, or HSV, has reached epidemic proportions in Lake Erie and Lake Ontario and has begun to spread inland. Scientists think the virus is also responsible for a fish kill in Wisconsin's Lake Winnebago. The virus, which first showed up in the Great Lakes in 2005, isn't harmful to humans, but it's deadly for many species of fish, including the kind of fishermen like to catch, your muskies, your catfish, smallmouth, largemouth, bass, perch, and they are all being affected. From New York to Wisconsin, people are worried that the virus could cause massive fish kills, cost billions of dollars in lost fishing and tourism dollars. And my next guest is worried that there is not enough money being invested in research and fighting this fish virus. Joining me now to talk about it is James Casey, Associate Professor of Virology at Cornell University College of Veterinary Medicine in Ithaca. Thanks for talking with us today. Dr. Casey, welcome.
Thank you, Ira. It's nice to be here.
How worried should we be?
Well, we should be worried at multiple levels. As you said, in terms of the economy, sport fishing represents a $4 billion a year industry just to the Great Lakes alone. And that will have a major impact. But as a biologist, I'm very much worried about the long-term effects to the ecosystem and the possibility that this virus will spread into aquaculture and affect other sources, food sources that we depend heavily on.
Where did it come from?
Nobody knows. That's the million-dollar question. It appears that it's genetically very close to another North American marine isolate that exists in the salt water. But the limited amount of information that's coming forth doesn't really give us any indication of the progression of how this virus changed. It's genetically very close to the marine isolate. There's only 17 amino acid substitutions, to be specific, in the glycoprotein gene. That's very minor in terms of genetics, but it confers the ability of this virus to cause a devastating effect on freshwater fish.
Put this in perspective for us. Certainly there are other kinds and other outbreaks of viruses. How does this compare with other ones that you've seen?
This most certainly is the most significant mortality event ever to hit North America for fish viruses. It's been long known that this virus has a tremendous capability to cause epidemics and outbreaks in aquaculture facilities in the marine environment. And a similar sort of outbreak happened in Europe in 1938 and had devastating effects to the aquaculture industry. Our watersheds are much larger than Europe, and our diversity of species is huge, and we now know that there are 23 species in the Great Lakes that are susceptible. So this virus is not specific to any one fish. It kills without regard, and it is spreading at an alarming rate.
All right. Rather than get into some questions from our audience, 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK, we're going to take a short break and come back and discuss this outbreak of deadly fish virus with James Casey, Associate Professor of Virology at Cornell University College of Veterinary Medicine in Ithaca, New York, and take your phone calls. Our number, 1-800-989-8255. Maybe you've seen or been affected by it yourself. You live up there near the Great Lakes or wherever this virus has spread. Give us a call. Our number, 1-800-989-8255. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. We're talking this hour about HSV, a deadly fish virus spreading through the Great Lakes. My guest is James Casey, Associate Professor of Virology at Cornell University College of Veterinary Medicine. Our number, 1-800-989-8255. Dr. Casey, could it move out and into other parts of the country?
It certainly can. we witnessed the spread of this agent, this virus, recently to Wisconsin. Michigan, Lake Michigan, was clean as of last year. And surprisingly, the virus appeared in an inland waterway 60 miles in from the Great Lakes, suggesting that the transmission of this virus was unique and probably by bait fish or by human activity, not by shipping. So human activity, namely boaters, bait, fish, transport of fish or infected bait, is probably the reason that the virus got into that lake. If it's that simple to get into an area that's 500 miles from here, it's just as easy to keep going.
And now we're in the fishing season.
Absolutely right. And a fish tournament was canceled in Winnebago, Lake Winnebago, because of the outbreak, and try to prevent the spread of this.
Now we have people with their trailers trailing around, you know, around the country with their fishing boats, taking stuff around with them.
It's so easy to prevent the spread of this disease, and it's going to depend very heavily upon the recreational boater and the recreational fisher person. That is, don't transport fish or release fish to other waterways. Wash, dry, and disinfect your bait wells and clean your boat, and you will prevent the spread of this. It's that simple.
Is it possible to develop a vaccine or something like?
There's been numerous attempts to make vaccines. Some of them are effective and have been applied to the commercial aquaculture industry, but there is no vaccine for this virus, and it would be impractical, if not impossible, to apply this to wildlife.
Is the federal government involved in fighting this, you know, like the U.S. Department of Agriculture, people like that?
Yeah, most certainly, and thanks for bringing that up. And that funding is a real issue when it comes to this, because the Department of Agriculture, of course, is very interested in preventing a disease in food sources, and that's aquaculture. And they can only be peripherally interested in funding wildlife diseases because of the threat to aquaculture. And so when we go down to wildlife, there's a scant number of agencies that can support this. Sea Grant is one of it through NOAA, and the Great Lake Trust and the Great Lakes Protection Agency. But that's about it. And the amount of money that's available is not encouraging. So we fight for money, and we're using up most of this resources. We don't have an infrastructure to answer these outbreaks. And if you look at a tier of funding, the lowest is always wildlife, and then USDA, and then diseases that affect us as humans directly.
So this sort of falls in a crack someplace.
Very much so. Yeah. We continue to see outbreaks and decay of the Great Lakes, and we're not answering to these things. And so we have to get very serious about the environment. As most people are aware, with Al Gore's recent publications, that global warming is a very serious event. Along with that comes environmental decay. And it's not too late to do something about it and to try to restore and maintain our wonderful heritage that we have in our waterways in the United States.
Let's go to Daniel in Rice Lake, Wisconsin. Hi, welcome to Science Friday.
Hello. In the Wisconsin news today, a brown trout found dead Lake Michigan tested positive. Will the fish develop immunity and populations rebound in time, or will some species be exterminated?
Danielle, that's incredibly difficult to answer, as you might imagine, with 23 different species all showing different susceptibility to disease. We don't know what's going to happen. We can predict that some species will be decimated. Whether fish develop an immunity that's long enough lasting to persist for the next year when the outbreaks happen is an unanswered question. It needs research. It needs funding to look at these things. So I really can't answer that in a way that would be in a positive sense to you. We just have to wait to see what happens.
Now, you know, when people hear about this deadly fish virus and they're catching it in fish that they eat all the time, how do you convince them that they're not being harmed by a virus? They're eating in a fish.
Well, it's purely a numbers basis. Fortunately or unfortunately, this virus, if it does infect a given fish, generally will kill it very quickly. The few laboratory transmissions that have been done show that the fish will die in 6 to 7 days after being infected, so it doesn't persist. If the virus does persist in fish, so-called develop a carrier state where they could carry it to the next year, they're not showing any clinical signs. That is no disease, and there's very little live virus in there. In fact, no one's been able to answer whether the virus is actually still in there. We know it is by epidemiology, but scientifically we haven't been able to purify it. Mm-hmm. So it's purely on numbers. There's no association. Fish viruses are so far evolutionarily distinct from us that there's very little indications that they are transmissible. And lastly, fish are generally growing at low temperatures in water. They're polytherms, that is, the temperature follows the water. Our temperature, of course, is 98.6, and the virus can't grow at that temperature.
Mm-hmm. 1-800-989-8255. Let's go to Lori in Tucson. Hi, Lori.
Hi.
Yeah, that's a long way from Lake Michigan.
It is. I have my parents live in Michigan. They live in Kalamazoo. And I just wanted to comment. I was thrilled to hear a story that I could relate to. My dad is a recreational fisher, and he fishes on Lake Michigan all the time, and he just, like, lives for the season opener and the lakes around there. And he's been bummed out. He's been calling me and telling me that he hasn't caught a thing. He spends, like, 6 hours on the water and gets nothing on the south end of Lake Michigan. So I just wanted to comment about that. So
thanks.
I don't know if it's, you know, spread or I don't if this is something I could talk to him about.
Dr. Casey?
Sure, I can answer that. And it comes down to surveillance. Lori, we just don't know. Surveillance means that we have to send people out in the field, do netting, measure the fish populations. There are very few people that do that, that do it on a haphazard sort of way. Let me give you a quick story. The outbreak in Gobi that brought us to it were gobies that were harvested by two skin divers, scuba divers, that bet each other a six-pack that they wouldn't go in the water in April. And they found the gobies swimming. That's not very rational in terms of surveillance. You have to be more systematic, go out and net and look at fish populations, and we're doing that. So unless you're really measuring the level of fish and the movement of fish in the lakes, we just have to shrug our shoulders and not know what's going on.
Good luck. Thanks for calling. 1-800-989-8255. Let's go to Kendall in Echo Peak, Maryland. Hi, welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, thank you for helping me learn about this disease. I was wondering how quickly is it spreading throughout the northern area, and how could it reach Maryland? And if so, would it be affecting a lot of the fish in our area?
It's an open question. We know that it spread to inland waters in New York, and now with the recent outbreaks in Michigan, we know it's on inland lakes. It is capable of moving, and it follows the fish, and it follows the fisher people and the bait dealers, and it'll follow infected fish that are transported. The interesting thing I can tell you is that we were the ones that discovered it's viral hemorrhagic septicemia, VHSV.
Oh, I call it ACHSV.
Oh, we'll
HSV. I'm sorry, you're right.
Yeah,
I'm confusing with herpes simplex.
Right, that's bad enough. We found it in bait minnows, and what was interesting is the bait minnows were apparently healthy. There were no clinical signs of disease, yet we found extremely high viral levels in bait minnows. So a visual inspection was not useful. We had to use a nucleic acid-based test to do it. So innocently, you could be spreading this, as a fisherman could spread this, thinking that the fish are healthy or whatever. So it's an invisible disease that is hard to follow. And we have to change our behavior. A common saying in virology is all infectious diseases are behavioral. And this is a behavior where we're transporting fish and innocently releasing minnows, thinking we're feeding fish and helping the environment. You might be infecting them. So we have to change our behavior, clean our boats, be very careful about transporting fish.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. Let's see if we can take another phone call here. And Dudley in Olympia, Washington. Hi, Dudley.
Hi.
Hi there.
I was wondering if it appears that this virus will affect anadromous fish like the salmon species of the Pacific Northwest.
Gee, we know we can get into salmon in the Great Lakes. The fear is the marine isolate of viral hemorrhagic septicemia is already having an impact on the salmon in the Northwest. It's been studied heavily in the rivers out there. Whether this virus is more pathogenic or less pathogenic to those species could be determined experimentally. It just hasn't been done.
Wow. So we were just at the beginning. We're at the tip of this iceberg.
Yeah, I think so. I hope we're in the middle of it right now, because the spread has been rather dramatic. I can tell you this spring, you can see with all the press releases that we're seeing numerous outbreaks, both in new locations and in locations from previous years up near Rochester and Rondecoyt Bay. We've seen an outbreak again in Gobi. So it's
but
back
what,
again.
What I'm saying, if you're saying, if I heard you correctly, that even marine fish are susceptible to this virus.
The marine fish have, as I said earlier in the talk, the marine isolate of viral hemorrhagic septicemia is genetically very close, and that does have an impact. We don't know if the freshwater variant, the new genetic type that's killing the fish in the Great Lakes, could even go back and infect marine species. It hasn't been tested. So we don't know what the effect of that would be should this virus in the Great Lakes get out into the salt water.
Mm-hmm. Mark in Whitewater, Wisconsin. Hi, Mark.
Hello.
Hi there. Go ahead.
I bought quite a large batch of tropical fish, must have been about a year ago, and a large number of them died. And I took some of them in, and they described it as hemorrhagic septicemia. And, that's what they said. First question is it possible to be released tropical fish into the local rivers and lakes, like goldfish and whatnot? Can that cause the disease to spread? Second, I don't know if you've really described the symptoms of the disease yet. Maybe that's not what I had to start with.
But. Well, we'll get into that. Those are two good questions. Let me remind everybody that I'm Ira Flatow. This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Talking with James Casey. Dr. Casey.
Sure. Certainly that you could spread diseases by releasing fish into a new environment. But hemorrhagic septicemia is a general term for a pathological condition that could be caused by a bacterial infection. And that's more than likely what happened to your tropical fish. Until you bring it to a diagnostic facility where they do histology or PCR, these are very expensive procedures, by the way, you'll never know. So you have to take it to a bona fide fish pathology laboratory to diagnose it correctly. Mm-hmm. Dudley, as an aside, this virus will infect zebrafish. That's one of our experimental models that we're working on, so we can purposefully infect these fish in a laboratory environment under high containment so nothing is released and study pathogenesis. So it just shows that this virus is, if you use the words, completely promiscuous, and it will infect a wide variety of species.
And the symptoms?
The symptoms are as the name implies, hemorrhagic septicemia. The endothelial lining of blood vessels is attacked by the virus and breaks it down, so the blood leaks into the tissue in pools. When you see one of these fish, the gills are completely white, and the blood is all pooled into the abdominal cavity and into the musculature. The kidneys and spleen are immediately infected and show a devastating effect. They're practically lysed, and the fish suffocates.
Huh. And to repeat, because we just have a couple of minutes left, the greatest the battle, the large battle here is in prevention, preventing it spreading.
If you look back at human epidemics before the advent of vaccines or other therapies, our most effective strategy was containment, and it gets into really complex mathematical terms on epidemiology, but containment of diagnosing and containing the spread. Just imagine if we know that we have an outbreak or the virus is present in one location, simply limiting activity in that location for perhaps a month would prevent its spread to other places.
Is there enough person power, manpower to man the, you know, and get the word out and tell people? And
well, that's us, and that's three other labs in the local environment to try to set up an extension where we can communicate how to prevent spreading this agent, innocently spreading it through boating activities. And we have numerous grants pending that we're trying to get funded so we can set up a continual monitoring system in the Great
Lakes.
But
why would you need grants on this? Shouldn't there be, you know, somebody goes out, like the National Guard or somebody, and talks to people if this is an epidemic that's going on? You're going to wait for a grant to be funded.
We first diagnosed this a year ago, and we're just getting funding now. So fortunately, we had some funding that we could apply and deficit spend, and so now we've caught up and we need more money to go on. So does everybody.
Yeah.
So, yes, most certainly we shouldn't be waiting, and this will be something to call your congressman or senator and let them know that something can be done about this. State agencies have historically been very generous. A lot of that money has dried up in the past and through need to support other initiatives, but now reestablishing a continual funding monitoring centers, environmental centers to surveil would be critical.
Dr. Casey, thank you very much. Good
thank
luck
you,
to
Arthur.
You and your efforts. James Casey, Associate Professor of Virology at Cornell University College of Veterinary Medicine in Ithaca, New York. We're going to take a break and come back and talk about how you can pick a song that's going to be a sure hit. Maybe. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News.